You are listening to the weekly message from Mount Helena Community Church. Celebration services are every Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Gateway Center. Or join us live online at www.mounthelena.cc.
Morning. We did Growth Track 301 this past Monday. And it's one of my favorite classes of Growth Track because I tell the people in the class, Leslie and I teach it, and we tell people it's all about you. So we do this personality test, and we do a spiritual giftings test, and in the personality test, Leslie and I always take it. You know, we take it every time we do Growth Track. So probably no surprise to you, but I came as a high extrovert, right? Yeah, no surprise there. But see, I'm learning this about myself. I have a point to this story, just in case you're wondering. I'm learning this about myself. In my extrovertedness, there's this part of my personality that I really do not like. I really don't like missing stuff. You know? Anybody else relate to that? Yeah, I really don't like missing stuff. So, case in point, Jason was talking about our men's rally, and I mean, I won't bore you with the details, but I've had about 8,000 other things, and I had to make a decision, so I had to decide, first time to miss a men's rally, I couldn't go. And this part of my personality was just like, ah, I hate missing stuff, right? So I chatted with a good friend of mine this morning just to ask how it was, what his experience was, a little bit you heard from Jason. But if any of you have that part of your personality, I want to help you with that. So I want to bring up my good friend, Justin Farabee. Yeah. Come on up, Justin. Oh, come on, you can do better than that. I didn't tell Justin what to say. I just asked him, tell me, just dig the wound in a little bit deeper. Tell me what I missed. Tell us your experience with the men's rally.
Yeah, he told me at the beginning of worship, he's like, I'm going to have you come up. And I'm like, what?
So I gave him notice, you know?
Yeah. Tyler's notice. So, yeah, I mean, I've gone all 3 years, and generally have been impacted all 3 years, but this year was a little different. I kind of went, and I really wasn't expecting much because I've been there for the past two, and so I kind of went, honestly, just as a little vacation. Let's get away for a couple days. Let's eat some good food. I don't have any responsibilities, and honestly, it started Friday night for me. It was the tone of the whole weekend was set, and God just started working in me from first night, from the first meeting. And it wasn't really anything real major, but it was just a starting to build brotherhood. And I got to talk with a lot of different guys I don't typically go and talk to. Tyler wasn't there, so I typically hang out with Tyler. I got to get a little more in-depth with my good friend David, Zach Furlong, but a lot of other guys that I just don't generally talk to. And God just really, really started breeding the idea of brotherhood into me, what it means to be a brother, what it means to have people that I can serve with, people that can come and help me and serve with me. By Saturday morning, I was a complete wreck by the end of that session. I cried a lot, I'll admit it. Most of us did. Don't let them tell you they didn't. And as I was sitting back there thinking about what I was going to say about the weekend, the word that kept going through my mind was, it's real. There's a realness when you can get away from everything that you're responsible for and you can just be who you are. There's a safety with men. And like I said, you can strip away everything that is fake about who you try to be, and you can be who God created you to be. And men can see who you are, and they can see your vulnerabilities, and they can see how they can help you be a better man. That's what I love about the weekends. So, men, if you haven't gone, if you ever have question about going, stop it. Just go. There's so many different ways God can find you, and God can work in you through it. One of the things I loved was just seeing the difference between there. We had a younger guy in one of my groups. He's an 18-year-old guy, and he was gleaning wisdom from a 50-year-old man. And I was like, there's such an awesome thing there that happens when a young man who is facing all kinds of different decisions and trials and things that he has to go through from a man who's been through there and has the wisdom to give him. And it's just an awesome experience. So
Wow.
Get after it, man.
Sounds great. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Wow. That's great. Glad you guys had a great time. Well, you doing all right this morning?
Yeah.
Good, good. Last time I spoke, I introduced this concept of thriving. How many people remember that? It was a few weeks ago. If you heard that message, you'll remember that one of the things I suggested in the message was that maybe, just maybe, thriving is not exactly sitting on an island with a drink in hand. You remember that? Maybe that's not the idea of thriving. And then if you also remember, during that message, and for those of you guys that didn't hear, this is what we did. We had a whiteboard up here, and I drew this really bad house, right? And I called it our Thrive House. And that's what we did. So this today, I did a really bad house in PowerPoint. And so I asked you to dream with me. I said, okay, what are some areas of your life that you want to thrive in? And these are all your answers. This is all the stuff that you came up with. You said, I want to thrive in overcoming, in finances, in health, in relationships, all those that are up there on the screen. And then I asked you to do something else. I asked you to close your eyes, and I asked you to pick one of those areas and imagine a best-case scenario for that area. So I think the one that we picked out on that Sunday was marriage. I said, for those of you that are married, picture what a great, outstanding, best-case scenario marriage would look like. Remember that? Yeah. So those are some of the areas that we said we wanted to thrive in. And then, after that, we learned what the foundation of our Thrive House was. It's one word. Anybody remember what that one word was at the bottom? I heard a really young voice say vision. Yeah, well done. Vision. We learned that as much as we can dream and as much as we can plan, that if we don't have vision for those things up above, the house will crumble, right? And then we learned the best part of the whole thing. The best part is when we looked at the words of Paul. We looked in the New Testament and we saw these words. It's Paul saying about God. He's saying, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine, according to the power that is at work within us. We learned that that best case scenario that we came up with is just the start of what God can do in that situation. You're picturing this best case scenario marriage, and God is saying, I can do so much more. I can do immeasurably more than you can ask or imagine. So one of my goals that morning was to get you to dream, get you out of the routine of Sunday morning and the craziness of a Sunday morning and maybe craziness of a week, and I just wanted you to slow down, and I just wanted you to dream. And the expression that I came up with was, I wanted to inspire you to seize the what-ifs. Remember that? I wanted you to get some vision for these different areas of your life. So today, I want to continue this conversation, because as I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about this morning, I thought, you know, there's just some things that are a little incomplete with that message. You know, we said a lot that last Sunday, but there's just some things that are incomplete, because this is how I feel about it. If we're dreaming and we're asking God for vision and God drops this thing into your spirit about this area of your life, that's great. But I would tell you that it's still incomplete. It's still half the equation. What do I mean by half the equation? I read some quotes this week that really help illuminate what I mean by half the equation. Let me read you a couple of these quotes. The first one, the world needs dreamers and the world needs doers. But above all, the world needs dreamers who do. And then Nelson Mandela said something similar. He said, without vision, without action is just a dream. Action without vision just passes the time. Love that part. Action without vision just passes the time, and vision with action can change the world. Vision with action can change the world. See, if all we have is vision and all we have is dreaming, I mean, that's great, and that's a good starting point, but without follow through, who's going to benefit from that vision? And really, I mean, isn't that the point of everything we do? I mean, at the heart and soul of Christianity is you have a guy that came to earth, put on flesh, and was crucified so that you would be reconciled back to God. So that's why I say, I mean, everything we do in Christianity, I can't think of a single thing we do that doesn't have people in it somewhere. Even if the person is yourself, it's all centered around people, right? That's what that whole love thing is. So that's what I want to talk about this morning is how we get from here to there. How we get from, if you were with us at that point, you know, you said, okay, this is my vision. This is something God has told me for marriage or finances or diet or whatever it was. But how do we get from here to there? Because honestly, I've had a couple of really good conversations about that message since then. And a couple of the conversations, there's some pretty big what ifs out there. As I've talked with a couple of you, you said, you know, my what if is blank. And I'm like, holy cow, God can do more than that? But you guys have visions and you guys have dreams. And so what I want to do this morning is talk about how we get from here to there. So this morning, I want to look in the Old Testament. We're going to go old school. And I want to look at a really familiar story. And it's a man that most of us have heard of. If you've never been in church before, if this is all new, I'm not going to presume anything about you. We're just going to start at square one, and we're going to go through this guy's story. The name of the man is Moses, and he's one of the most iconic characters in all of the Bible. And this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to look at his life, but I want to do it a little bit differently. I want to start at the end, okay? And this is why. Here's a really morbid thought. You ready for it? Picture the end of your life. Picture that you're at, well, not you anymore, but there's a service for you. And the question I would have for you is, what do you want people to say about you when you're gone? Whoever's doing your eulogy or whoever's doing your service, what do you want them to say? What do you want your friends and family to say about you when you're gone? Then the second question I would have is, what do you want God to say about you? You know? What do you want God to say about your time on earth? Are you curious what he said about Moses' time on earth? No? Yeah, okay, good, sorry. In Hebrews chapter 11, we have this, it's pretty much like I call it the Hall of Fame. You have all these different descriptions of all these men who have come before us, and we have God's thoughts about these men, these heroes. Let me read you, this is how Moses' life ended. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. More about that in a second. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. I underlined that. That is just such a thing that God could say about you. That he didn't think about all this other stuff. He didn't focus on the earthly stuff. He was looking to his reward. He had foresight. He was looking to the end. He was looking to his reward. So that's where Moses' life ended. Now, I want to go all the way back, and I want to rewind the story, and I want to go back to the beginning, because that's a great description. I mean, if God said that about us, we'd be doing all right, wouldn't we? But I want to give us context this morning. I want to give us, because that, as great as that is, there's such a story behind this guy's life. And we're going to see this morning, it's going to help us realize how we can get from here to there. Some of the what-ifs we have in our life, we can take right out of the story of Moses. So Moses, he was born a Hebrew boy. And he was born in Egypt, but the problem was he was born during a not great time on the earth. Because what was happening was the Israelites, his people, were enslaved to the Egyptians. Okay, the Egyptians were having them build these pyramids, these huge structures, and they were doing this back-breaking labor. So all of Moses' people were enslaved under the Egyptians. But see, if that's not bad enough, there was another problem. Pharaoh, the leader of the land, he saw that the Israelites were growing in number. And Pharaoh started to get worried. He was starting to do the math in his head. He said, okay, as these babies grow up into men, they're going to have the numbers to overthrow my government and I'm going to be out of power. So his great idea was, okay, all the boys, throw them in the Nile River. And it's not baptism, okay? He's killing them. He says, all the boys in the Nile River. So if you're Moses' parents, this is not great news for you. All right, you just had this baby boy, beautiful little baby boy. I don't know if he was beautiful, but we're just going to say he was beautiful. What baby isn't beautiful? I mean, come on. You have this beautiful baby boy, and his mom, this is funny, his mom decides to think out of the box a little bit by putting her baby in a box. She made a basket, and she decides to put her baby Moses, her new baby Moses, in the basket and float him down the Nile River. Was there a convoy waiting on the other side to pick him up? No. No, she didn't know what was going to happen to her baby. She had no idea. She just knew that a basket on the Nile River was better than her baby at the bottom of the Nile River, right? So by God's sheer providence, by God's hand, baby Moses was floating down the Nile River, and Pharaoh's daughter was downstream bathing, and she sees this basket come down the river. So she fishes the basket out of the water, and it, lo and behold, there's this baby in it. So she takes this baby, and she raises it as her own for 40 years. So you have this situation where Moses is now being raised and trained as an Egyptian, not as an Israelite, not as a slave, but as an Egyptian. He's being trained with all the best education. He's got all the access to all the food and the fruits, and he's got these accommodations that are great. But the story does not end there, does it? Well, one day, sometime after 40 years, that's all the Bible says, after 40 years, so we don't know how old he is exactly, but Moses is out in the field, surveying all the work going on, and he sees a fight breaking out. And the fight, it's interesting who the fight was between, because Moses has some skin in the game on both sides. The fight is between an Egyptian, who he is now, and an Israelite, his original heritage. And so something rises up within Moses. Something rises up, and he goes over there, and he tries to stop the fight, and I guess he does stop the fight because he kills the Egyptian. And so the next thing he does, he says, okay, this is bad. Guy's dead because of me. It's not good. I belong to the house of Pharaoh, so I'm going to cover this up. So he takes the Egyptian, and he takes him somewhere else near, and he buries him in the sand. So it's at this point Moses is thinking, okay, I've got it made. I covered it up. Nobody saw it. It was the middle of the day, but nobody saw it. I'm fine. Well, then the next day, another fight breaks out. Fight number two. And this time, it's not with an Egyptian and an Israelite. It's between two Israelites, two of his own people. So he goes up to them. The killing just happened yesterday. So that's fresh on his mind. So he said, don't kill him, don't kill him, don't kill him. He goes up to the people saying, this is what he said. He says, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? Then one of the men says, pretty cheeky response considering who they're talking to, but he says, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? Dun dun. The gig is up at this point. What was thought to be covered up is not covered up. Everybody knows. So Moses, at that point, he can't know who all knows, but Pharaoh hears about it. And Pharaoh tries to kill Moses. Moses takes off. He flees. He does the only thing he can do. He runs. And he runs to this place called Midian. And it's there that Moses starts the next 40 years of his life. Well, when he gets to Midian, he meets a girl. Because every great story has a girl involved, right? Yeah, And he meets a girl named Zipporah. And he marries Zipporah. Now, here's some Bible trivia for you. You ready for some Bible trivia? They have a son together, and they name their son Gershom. Just for the pure heck of it, I looked up what Gershom means. Does anybody know what Gershom means? This is what Gershom means. It means literally, I am a foreigner in a foreign land. Parents, think about the process you went through in naming your children. Think about how much time and energy and prayer and thought went into naming your children. It's a big deal, isn't it? Because they're going to have this name for the rest of their life. And Moses had become so acquainted with this foreigner part of his identity that he decides to pass that on to his son. And he names his son, I am a foreigner in a foreign land. I mean, there's a whole study in itself right there. So then Moses has his famous burning bush experience. That's where we're going to pick up the story. We're going to read a little scripture this morning. So Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? And it's there that a conversation starts between Moses and God. This is great. God tells Moses, the cry of the Israelites, your people, has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So if this is a really familiar story, just forget everything you know about this story and really immerse yourself in this story, because paraphrased, this is how I read it. This is what God is saying to Moses. He's saying, you remember that place you ran from 40 years ago? Remember that? Yeah, you're not only going back there, but you're going back there to confront the man who is now leading the land, who is like a brother to you. Oh, and you're going to tell him to release all of the Israelites from slavery. I did a little bit of research on this week. That represented millions. Everybody say millions. Millions of people. This is not like, hey, go release the small group from slavery. This is saying the entire workforce, poof, gone. Moses just saw this cool burning bush. He's like, hey, what's that? Cool. And then, you know, take off your shoes. This is holy ground. That whole thing happened. Go back. Go back and free the people. So he's unsure. This is what I wrote in my notes. Understatement of the year. Moses is unsure of the task before him. He has this big what if in front of him. Because he has there's the possibility of releasing all of his people from slavery. Let's look at what Moses did. Because I think this is where we're going to get some practical application for the visions and the what ifs in our life. The first thing Moses did, if you're taking notes, I'm going to put this up on the screen, but number one, Moses decides to start. He decided to start. It seems really simple to think about this, right? It really seems simple to even mention this in a talk, but I can definitely relate to this, especially when you're thinking about something either really large or something either even small. We get in this, like, it's a valley of indecision, right? And we can think it to death. I mean, literally. We think about it so long that the opportunity's not even there anymore. It's just this valley of indecision. The first thing we have to do is decide to start. We have to get moving. You know that old expression, you can't steer a parked car? That's what it is. We have to decide to do something. Whatever it is, decide to do something. So look at the scripture where God and Moses are talking. Now remember, God just told him, you're going to go back, you're going to confront your former brother, you're going to say, you know, let my people go, that whole thing. So Moses says to God, he says, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? I probably wouldn't have worded it like that, just to be honest. I would have said something like, listen, man. I killed a guy 40 years ago in broad daylight with a bunch of people watching, and then I covered it up, and then I was found out, and then I took off, and they're probably still gunning for me. That's how I would have said it. But it's at this moment that God says something really powerful, but I want to warn you here. This is really easy to gloss over. And even when I tell you what it is, you might even dismiss it. But God, the creator of the universe, says this. Exodus 3:12, God said, I will be with you. And if you're really honest with yourself this morning, isn't it easy to gloss over that? Isn't it kind of easy? Like, yeah, it's church, whatever, I hear that all the time. No, just give me a second. The creator of the universe, Moses didn't know he was going to talk to God. He's seeing this cool burning bush. And this God that he has heard stories about just gave him this mandate. And Moses says, who am I to do this? And God says, I will be with you. You know, maybe we gloss over it because we hear it too much in church, or maybe we gloss over it because we just flat don't believe it. Maybe because we're looking at our past and we know the mistakes we've made or the things we did that we shouldn't do. And maybe we even doubt ourselves. We say, yeah, God, you're with the good Christians, the ones that are perfect. Well, let me tell you, there are no perfect Christians, right? God is saying to Moses the same thing he's saying to you today. I will be with you. And you guys, if you hear nothing else today, hear that. I will be with you. That should give us a certain confidence to do things that we normally wouldn't do. Let me put this a different way. You know that question, sometimes we have a personality question that we ask. If you could do something and you knew you wouldn't fail, what would you do? You ever heard that question before? Let me ask it a different way. If you really knew that God was with you, I mean, to the bottom of your soul, if you knew that God was with you, what would you do? What would you do? This makes me think of myself as a wee lad, as it were. I come from a large family. I've got two older brothers, an older sister, two younger brothers, and my two older brothers, they've always been big old boys, okay? And as I was going through school, I was always a pretty skinny kid, and I never got picked on all that much. The one time I did, I had an altercation, and I'm going to tell you about it. It was in junior high, and I was good friends with this kid, and for some reason, the relationship turned sour. I was trying to remember why. I can't remember. But, I mean, it turned really sour to the point where, just like in the movies, you hear about me and this kid are going to fight after school, and, you know, all these rumors are spread and everything. So I ride the bus, and I get off at the bus stop, and I had to walk a few blocks to my house. Well, I get off the bus, and I see my former friend there. I see this other guy. And I come to find out that this other guy is my friend's cousin. And he was older, probably like 40 or something. But at least, okay, he was probably a senior in high school because he had a stupid car. And so I get off the bus, and you can imagine the thoughts running through my head. So I have to walk that way, and so I start walking this way, and this kid, or this guy's cousin comes up to me, and he's like, I'm thinking I'm going to get punched in the face. And he's like, tomorrow, you're dead. Who does that? Like, tomorrow? That's intimidation 101 right there. That's what it is. So I went home a little quicker that day. And it came up in conversation when we were home and, you know, was telling the family about what happened. And, you know, that was that. So the next day I went to school and I agonized over my drive home in the bus the whole day, thinking about what I was going to do, thinking about, you know, we didn't have YouTube back then, so I couldn't take like a karate course in YouTube during the day. So I ride the bus home, and I'm looking out the windows, and I'm trying to see where everybody is, and so the bus rolls up at my bus stop, and And I can't see anything because there's a lot of kids on the bus. So I get off the bus, and there's no friend there. And there's no stupid cousin there. Like, I'm looking all around, and I don't see him. I'm like, okay, smart. They're going to flank me, and then they're going to pound me. So I'm walking home, like the 3 blocks. It wasn't far. I'm walking home the 3 blocks, and I'm continually looking over my shoulder. I'm looking behind me, and there's no cousin. There's no friend. Ever. I get home, so thankful to be home. And nothing. I mean, it was the most anticlimactic story that I ever experienced to that point. So I go to school the next day, I'm asking a few buddies, and I learn the rest of the story. I learned that at some point the previous evening, so cousin says, tomorrow you're dead, sometime that night, the cousin ran into my older siblings. Big. And they still won't tell me the story, but somehow they convinced this guy that I am not to be trifled with. You guys, I can tell you where I was when I learned that news. I can tell you the weather that day. What I can't tell you is how I felt in that moment. Because I had such a palpable realization of who was with me. And I had such a realization of who had my back. And you guys, let me tell you this, that as great as my siblings are still to this day, they are not God. They are not God. And the creator of the universe today is telling you, I will be with you. Whatever it is, I will be with you. You know, I just want to tell you that maybe 2015 wasn't a great year for you. You know, we're a month into this new year, and as we look back on 2015, maybe it wasn't great for you. Maybe you had some things that happened. Maybe you experienced some big loss, or maybe you just got knocked down, and you don't know how you're going to get back up. You don't know if you're going to get back up. I want to tell you the same thing that God told Moses. You will get through 2016 because God, the creator of the universe, is saying, I will be with you. I will be with you. But here's the thing. You have to decide to start. You have to do something. Whatever it is, decide to start. So what is it that you can start today? I mean, just to get really practical, can you completely heal a broken relationship today? Probably not. But you can start with a phone call. You can start with a text. You can start by saying, I'm sorry for the part that you had to play in that. Could you run the Governor's Cup route today? Probably not for most of us. But if that's one of your goals, if that's part of your vision, start by running up and down the block. See how you do. Can you get out of debt today? Probably not. But you could start by creating a budget that would allow you to make an extra payment on that debt. The key is, do something. You have to decide to start. So secondly, first we're going to decide to start, just like Moses did. Secondly, we're going to use your talents, okay? So despite God saying to Moses, I will be with you, as huge as that is, Moses still feels insecure. I can totally relate. He's got this big job in front of him, this big what if, and naturally he has some questions. So in chapter 4, Moses answered, well, and you can just hear his voice. You can, well, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? So Moses is really insecure. He's asking all these questions. The Lord, watch this. He asks him this really weird question that I've always thought was weird. Then the Lord said to him, what's that in your hand? What? I was just talking about how they're not going to pay attention to me and they're not going to listen to me. And you said, "What's that in your hand?" Because he had something in his hand the whole time. Moses replies, "A staff." Now, I'm going to just put a little thing in there. I'm going to put in a big there. I'm thinking Moses would be like, staff? Why would God, in this moment when Moses is really insecure and really wondering, why would he ask him about his staff? Again, this is something that we normally read right over, but it's important. Why did Moses have a staff? Very good. Because he was a shepherd. This isn't like a housewarming gift that he's bringing to the burning bush party. He's out there shepherding sheep with this staff. He sees a burning bush. He goes over to check it out. And then he gets this huge job, and God's saying, "Yeah, go do this big thing." And he's like, "I don't know if I can." And he says, "What's that in your hand?" "It's a piece of wood. It's a staff. It's an ordinary staff," is what it is. But we can't miss how important this staff becomes. As you read the story of Moses, you will see how important this staff becomes. God takes this ordinary staff and he uses it for something extraordinary, time and time again. That ordinary staff in the life of Moses gets thrown on the ground, turns into a snake, and then back into a staff again. After that, that staff is used to part the Red Sea so that his people can have safe voyage across that sea. And later, Moses is going to take this ordinary staff, he's going to hold it above his head, and God is going to do something extraordinary, and he's going to smite his enemies right in front of him using this ordinary staff. So my question to us this morning is, what can happen? What has the potential, the ability to happen when you take that thing that seems ordinary and you offer it to God to do something extraordinary? What is it that you have, asking in a different way, what is it that you have that you would think, what is it that you have that seems ordinary that God will use for the extraordinary? What do you have in your hand? What is your skill set? What is your tools? What is your giftings that God is going to use to do something extraordinary? I looked up some historical examples this week just to see what history would tell us. Let me read you some examples where people have used ordinary to go extraordinary. There was once a curious boy who was, he was actually kicked out of school, and the document said for asking too many questions. That was Thomas Edison, inventor. There was an elderly man that didn't have any children that is now regarded as the father of a nation, Abraham, Genesis chapter 21. There was a guy that started a movie company with $750, and he has gone on to win 32 Oscars, Walt Disney. There was a gentleman that tried out for his high school basketball team, and the coach said, quote, "You're just not good enough." Well, Michael Jordan went on to win 6 world championships. And maybe the biggest example was an ordinary teenage girl that would go on to become the mother of Jesus, Mary. What is your staff? What do you have that you would call ordinary, but God says, "I don't make ordinary"? What do you have in your hand? The third thing. So we're going to decide to start. We're going to use your talents. We're going to go from ordinary to extraordinary. And then the final thing, before I show this to you, just everybody exhale, just go, whew. This is the tough one. You're going to trust God. So Moses, again, let's go back to the story. He's still wondering about the job in front of him. And this time he thinks of something specific to tell God. He goes back to God and he says this in chapter 4, verse 10. "Pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue." The Bible never tells us what that means, but "I'm slow of speech and tongue." The Lord replies this. Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. So here's why we exhale. Because here's where the rubber meets the road. We can decide to start in our own power, and we can even use our talents in our own power, but the rubber hits the road because when we have this large thing in front of us, this what if, because remember, God said, I'm able to do immeasurably more, okay? When we have this large thing in front of us and we decide to start and we're using our talents, I can guarantee you that there's going to come a time when you're going to say to yourself, I can't do this. I'm not qualified. I don't know how to do this. I'm slow of speech and tongue. Those thoughts are going to come. And we get so much encouragement from this story because Moses was in that exact same position. He could not accomplish in his own power what God was calling him to do. And here's the interesting thing about this. Think about who he's talking to. He's talking to God, right? And he's saying, I'm slow of speech and tongue. In that moment, do you think that God could have healed Moses? I think it's a pretty safe assumption that whatever Moses' issue with his speech was, God could have went, done, healed, go. But he didn't. He didn't heal Moses. Instead, he says this. He says, I will help you and teach you what to say. This is where I think of a quote from Mark Batterson, an author that I read. He says, go after a dream that is destined to fail without divine intervention. You guys, that's big, isn't it? You think about that? He's saying, go after a what if so big that if God doesn't intervene, it'll fail. And that's what Moses was right in front of. Go free millions of people from slavery. You're not going to get a flow chart or a schematic for that. You're going to have to trust God. You're going to have to depend on him to fill in those gaps, aren't you? I want to go back to where we started. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. Look at those last few words. At work within us. What tense is that? What is it? That's present tense. Whatever it is, whatever your what if in front of you, whatever it is, that is the cool part of partnering with God, because God doesn't just drop it in your lap, right? The cool part is he takes you on this journey that is hard and difficult, and you're going to see things come out of yourself that you don't like and that you get to refine. And this whole process is fun because it's almost like the story, like what's more important, the journey or the destination, right? What's more important, the thing that you have to do or the person that's doing it? God is at work within us. That's why when we picture this perfect scenario and we think, okay, that's my what if, it's a question like, okay, for God, who's able to do immeasurably more, I wonder if he's more concerned with the end product or what it does in you, going after a vision that big. According to his power that is at work within us. He didn't heal Moses that day. He says, I'm going to help you and I'm going to teach you. And I'm guessing whatever is in front of you today, it's not instant for you either, is it? It's in that moment that God is saying, I want to help you. I want to teach you. It's at work within us. So in closing this morning, I just want to remind us of what's at stake with all this. Can we put that picture of the lame house up there? Yeah, there we go. I want to remind us of what's at stake. If you didn't do this exercise, go ahead and do it now. Let's everybody do this. Pick an area on that house or pick an area in your life that's not on the house. And again, in your mind's eye, what does it look like to thrive in that area? Just be ready. I'm going to ask you another question after that. But what does it look like to thrive in that area? Picture your days. What do you get up thinking about? What does your routine become? What does the conversation in your house turn into? What is the culture of your workplace, of your school? How is that changed by you thriving in this area? Okay? But here's what's at stake. Even bigger than you, and I'd say even the picture you have in your mind, there's something else at stake. In your mind's eye, look around and think about who else would be impacted by that. If your area was thriving, man, and God was in the middle of that, and he was doing immeasurably more, who else would be impacted by that? Because I would propose that that might even be a bigger truth, is that if you get this vision and you get this goal and this what if you never follow through with that, whose world will not be changed? Or let's put it a different way. When you do follow through with that, whose world could be changed for the better? Because you guys, God is able to do immeasurably more. And if we get that vision and if we start following through with that, if we decide to start on it and we put our chips in the table and we use our talents and then we get to the place where we're going to trust God, I am so hopeful that whatever area it's in your life, you will change the world. You will change somebody's world when that happens. Is it parenting? When you start to do all that stuff, your kid's world will change, I guarantee you. Is it marriage? Your spouse's world will change, I guarantee you. Because that's the pattern that God has set up, right? Start. Use your talents. And then the most scary part, trust God. So my question this morning is, I mean, this isn't something that can be resolved on a Sunday for you. This is something that you're going to have to take home and digest and process and maybe even create some action plans for this. But my question to you this morning is it worth it? Is it worth it? And let's put some people behind this. Are they worth it? Are the people in your life worth it? Will you pursue that what if? Will you decide to start? Will you use those talents? And will you trust God?
For more information, visit our website at www.mounthelena.cc. Download our mobile app available in iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook.